Hey guys, this is Beth Golay, and before we get started with Marginalia, I just wanted to say that KMUW's podcast platform is made possible by High Touch Technologies. High Touch is a software technology and business communications company that provides products, services, and support to all industries. High Touch brings the human touch to technology with a world-class team of industry experts. Learn more at hightouchtechnologies.com. And here is Marginalia with Lydia Fitzpatrick.
This is Marginalia, a production of KMUW Wichita.
Marginalia, notes in the margin of a book.
Notes, commentary, and similar material written in the margin of a book.
Comments and notes, which are incidental or additional to the main topic
in the margin of a book.
In her new novel, Lydia Fitzpatrick tells the story of two teenage brothers, Ilya and Vladimir, who live together in Russia. While the boys have always dreamed of escape from their life in Russia, it's only Ilya who gets to come to the United States in an exchange student program. Ilya exchanges one refinery town in Russia for another in Louisiana, and although his body has escaped the physical location of his birth, family drama will not release his heart or mind. I recently spoke with Lydia Fitzpatrick about her new novel, her characters, and her process. I'm Beth Golay, this is Marginalia, and here's our conversation. I'm probably going to be one of several, you know, news people who ask this question, and I hope that it's okay. But do you have any ties to Russia?
I do. Yes, I'm not surprised by this question. My mom is a Russian historian, and she lived and studied in Russia during the Cold War. She was at Moscow State University, and when I was little, she was working on a nonfiction book about Russia, about commerce in 19th century Russia. And so, you know, I think Russia was a presence in my house as a kid in the 80s in a way that it wasn't for most of my friends, certainly. And it was a passion of my mom's. And I think we kind of either like subsume these passions of our parents or resist them. And in my case, it was contagious. You know, I became really interested in Russia. And then when I was 8 or 9, we hosted two Russian students. Two girls came and stayed with us, not for very long, but it left a big impression on me. The younger of the two was, I think, 6 years old at the time, and she was a brilliant pianist, and she performed at the Kennedy Center with Rostropovich at the end of her stay with us. And I remember she was like so tiny that she played standing up so that her feet could reach the pedals. And I was, you know, a completely ordinary 8 or 9 year old at the time. And I just remember being really in awe of her, you know, the bravery it took for her to play up there on that stage, but also to come so far from home and family to be with us and to pursue this opportunity. And I think that idea of sort of the things that we have to sometimes leave behind in pursuit of adventure or opportunity, the people and places that can be abandoned in pursuit of them, that really stuck with me and, you know, found an outlet in Ilya's character.
And so we should probably set the book up and why I'm even asking about Russia. So the title is Lights All Night Long, and it has basically two locations that we go back and forth between, not every chapter, but we do hop back and forth between location and also in time. So the easiest for me to make sure I don't do any spoilers, do you have like an elevator speech for this book?
Yeah, definitely. So Lights All Night Long is the story of two Russian brothers. Ilya is a brilliant academic and is tapped at an early age by a very devoted teacher for this exchange program that could bring him to Leffe, Louisiana, which is an imaginary town in Louisiana, for a year of high school. And his brother, Vladimir, is very magnetic but very drawn to trouble. And as Ilya begins preparing for this exchange program, Vladimir is sort of drawn into deeper and deeper trouble. And when Ilya arrives in Louisiana, Vladimir has just been imprisoned for a series of murders in their hometown. And Ilya is convinced of Vladimir's innocence, and with the help of his host sister, Sadie, sets out to prove that Vladimir did not, in fact, commit these crimes.
Now, I mentioned that this book is set in different locations. So the location in Russia, help me with that pronunciation of that.
Berlozhniki. And it means a bear's den in Russian.
And is it a real location?
It's not. No, it's an imaginary town in Russia's northwest. And I used several different places in the same region as inspiration, but I sort of you know, pulled from them the things that I needed to make the story work while trying to stay, you know, as true to the details and particulars of these real places as I could.
And you live in California, yes?
I do. I live in Los Angeles.
Where are you from originally?
I'm originally from Virginia, from Norfolk, and then we moved up to the D.C. area when I was, I think, 8.
So setting a book in Louisiana and part of it in Russia, I mean, how did you research location?
Yeah, so we actually traveled to Russia as a family in the mid-90s, and we were visiting an uncle of mine who lived there at the time. And, you know, I knew in sort of a middle school civics way that Russia was in the middle of a political transformation. This was, you know, in the wake of perestroika. But the forms it took really shocked me. There was a dead body in the courtyard of our apartment building one morning, and there were old men and women selling their Soviet medals at a street market. And there were bodyguards with, you know, machine guns. And it was just a place that felt very dynamic. There was a lot of heartbreak, but there was also this real sense of hope that a transformation was about to occur. And I wasn't totally sure, you know, what that hope was for, but the kind of the force of it stuck with me. And then I went back to Russia with my mom on a research trip in 2008. I was working on a different project at the time, but a lot of the details and, you know, the notes I took then made their way into the novel. And then once I had figured out the specifics of Lights All Night Long, I started kind of reading in order to put those two trips to Russia like into context. So I read political and economic histories of Russia in the 90s and 2000s and memoirs. There's one memoir in particular called One Soldier's War by Arkady Babchenko that was really, really useful in helping me, you know, get inside the head of a teenage Russian boy. The memoir is by Arkady Babchenko, and he obviously, and he was conscripted at age 19 to go and serve in Chechnya. So that was a really, really inspirational book for the novel. And then I also read Svetlana Alexievich's Oral Histories, Voices from Chernobyl, which is a pretty well-known one. But then Secondhand Time was really instrumental in drafting the novel. It's a collection of these really intimate oral histories that, you know, taken together, give all these different perspectives on the collapse of the Soviet Union. That was all really useful. And then I'm also a big fan of using photographs for inspiration and research. And a photographer named Donald Weber shot a series of photos in Northwest Russia. And, you know, I couldn't afford the prints, but I bought like a little chapbook of his photos and I cut them out and pasted them to the wall around my desk. And a lot of those images made their way pretty specifically into the book.
So do you speak much Russian? I mean, the book was in English, and even when your characters were speaking back and forth to each other in Russian, I mean, we got the English translation. But how are you with your Russian?
I am terrible. I have no idea. I wish I were a lingual prodigy, but I'm nothing close. So I took Russian in high school for a year, and then I started taking it again when I was working on the novel, and I have this really patient Russian teacher. And, you know, I can just see how hard she's trying to help me. But it's a very complex language. You know, it requires, as she often tells me, like different use of your vocal muscles than English does. And, you know, I'm still working on it. But I think just putting myself in the classroom and immersing myself in the language helped a lot, you know, in drafting the book. I think obviously it would have been wonderful if I could be fluent in the same way that Ilya is in English, but I had to settle for something much less.
Well, and you know, it struck me when Ilya would come to the United States and he was living with the host family in Louisiana, and he was having to try to figure out all of, we have a lot of idioms and just phrases over here that we use that do not mean what somebody coming from another country would think that it would mean, don't we?
Yeah, we do. No, we have tons. And, you know, partway through the writing of that, I sort of realized that. And Ilya has this book of idioms that he's, you know, he's sort of in love with studying and trying to, you know, check each one off the list that he's memorized. But I think the list is pretty endless.
Now, one of your characters was just so endearing to me, and I'm going to say it wrong, but is it Babushka?
Yeah, Babushka.
Does that mean grandmother?
It does.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is she modeled after somebody that you know?
You know, I think that Like a lot of writers, there are bits and pieces of, you know, the people I've known and loved who make their way into my characters. There are definitely some aspects of Babushka that remind me of my own grandmother, you know, who lived through the Great Depression and definitely put a lot of faith in just, you know, being able to provide food for her grandkids and for the people who she loved, and that was like a central importance in her life. So that was one character element. And also, she had a very deep faith and had also lost a son, my dad. So there were several, you know, parallels between her and my grandmom. And, you know, I think that sort of mix of toughness and tenderness that's at the center of her character came in part from my grandmother.
Now, I'm kind of curious about the construction of the book because, you know, like I mentioned earlier, the chapters go back and forth between place, but also time. Did you write it from chapter to chapter, or did you write like what happened in Russia in one stretch and then what happened in Louisiana in one stretch?
So I wrote chapter to chapter. So part of what I loved about having two such different settings was the way that it sort of energized the writing when I would move back and forth from one to the other. I'm not sure if I'm alone in this as a writer, but beginnings, you know, have a lot of energy, as do the new characters. Like anytime you're introducing something a little fresh to the page, it brings this spark to your writing. So moving from one place to another did that for me, and it would kind of always give this little jolt of momentum to the writing. So I did alternate chapters, and then I made my way, sort of knowing what was going to happen maybe two or three chapters in advance, to the end of the book, only it was a really, really terrible ending, that first draft. It was awful. Like, there's this Edward P. Jones quote about how, you know, he always knows his character's going to start out in Washington and end up in Baltimore. And I was thinking of that when I got to this bad ending. And it was like, I'm at this terrible rest stop on I-95. Like, I did not make it anywhere. So when I got to that point, for about 6 months, I didn't write at all. I sat at my computer and just tried to puzzle out the ending and to figure out a way to make it work. And that was a really dark time in the drafting process. But what happened eventually is that I did separate the storylines. I pulled the two storylines apart and I looked at them each with an eye towards, you know, the requirements of craft. Did they each have tension? Did they each have an arc? Did they each have resolution? And once I had sort of narrowed my focus in that way, each of those storylines became more approachable, and I was able to kind of crack open some of the issues in each one. And that's not to say that the book was solved at that point, because, you know, usually when you have a problem that far into the story, the origins are much further upstream. So I had to do a pretty wholesale revision after figuring out where I thought the novel should actually end. But at least, you know, after that, I was writing again. So I was much relieved.
How long did it take you to pen this?
It took 6 years. The first year and a half or so, I was working on a novel in which Sadie was a protagonist. And I probably wrote a half dozen 100-page openings to a novel. You know, whenever a novelist says they have a full novel in a drawer, I get really jealous because I just have these six different openings to, you know, a novel that I've already written now, so that are pretty much worthless. But yeah, beyond that year and a half, once Ilya entered the story, it was about 4.5 or 5 years.
Now, I mean, Ilya was also, I mean, you had quite a few likable characters. I mean, some were quirky, but did you have a favorite? I've told you, you know, some of mine, but.
Yeah, that's tough. It's a little bit like Sophie's Choice. So Ilya is the most like me. He's sort of neurotic, devoted. He's very protective of the people he loves. But then, you know, Vladimir has this like love for life that seems contradictory to the risky choices that he's constantly making. And, you know, I think I just kind of fell in love with his energy. And there's also a sort of, you know, a sense of wish fulfillment in some ways in writing a character like Vladimir, who follows his impulses in a way that I don't and that Ilya doesn't. And so, you know, it was refreshing to kind of have the juxtaposition of the two of them.
Now, Lights All Night Long, the title, I'm assuming it refers to living next to that lighted refinery in both locations. Is that right? Or is there another meaning or a deeper meaning to that?
Yeah, you know, I think to me, the lights of the refinery, they're in some ways, you know, symbolic of Ilya's hopes. And they also are a little bit of a mirage. You know, the refinery is right in Ilya's backyard, but despite the natural wealth of this region, the money that comes from it couldn't be further from Ilya's pockets and his family's pockets. A lot of times in this era, in the 90s, you know, workers like Ilya's mother at these refineries wouldn't be paid for months and months or up to a year. So there was a lot of wealth to be had. But one of the heartbreaking things about the restructuring of the Russian economy was that that wealth did not trickle down to ordinary citizens like Ilya and his family in the way that it should have. So I think that idea of like this hope that's kind of always on the horizon, but not quite close enough to reach, that was resonant for me.
That was Lydia Fitzpatrick, author of the book Lights All Night Long, which was published by Penguin Press. Thanks for joining us for Marginalia. Discover more episodes at KMUW.org, on the KMUW app, or wherever you get your podcasts. Marginalia is produced at KMUW Wichita. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editors are Luann Stevens and Haley Krausen, and I am the producer. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.